Maui Nui is on a mission to help balance axis deer populations for the good of our environment, communities, and food systems on the island of Maui. They've shared over 126,000 pounds of nutrient-dense protein with the Maui community. Secure your spot now. Become a snack subscriber and join in helping to build more resilient food and ecosystems on Maui. Visit MauiNuiVenison.com. That's MauiNuiVenison.com. And use promo code BEAR for 20% off your first order. You know what my favorite text is? A waypoint in the Onyx Hunt app to a goblin turkey. The list on the Onyx Hunt app features for chasing turkeys is long, but knowing exact public and private boundaries and land ownership details will help you find more places to hunt, whether that's on public or private. I'll be toting the Hunt app through the spring woods in a few states this year, and I recommend you do the same if you want more turkeys on your table. Also, Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onyxmaps.com/hunt this spring.
There's nothing like snook hook sets at dawn or catching a tarpon in the moonlight. Find your next fishing trip made easy on fishingbooker.com and experience the magic of the Sunshine State or any other destination on your fishing bucket list. Book a blue water adventure in search of sailfish or go snapper fishing with the kids. With over 6,000 captains and trips to choose from, planning your next one just got a whole lot easier. Download the Fishing Booker app on the Google Play or App Store or visit them online at fishingbooker.com to book your trip today.
What are the things you have in your life that are really valuable, but you don't pay for and you couldn't quite sell them?
In January of 2024, the Gillette Coon Supper celebrated its 80th annual dinner. This bizarre wild game tradition has made a name for itself as one of the premier political events in Arkansas, but it's more than that. It's holding a struggling but strong community together. This is one of the most unique Bear Grease stories we've ever told. It's a deep dive into small-town America and what makes us what we are. We'll go to the Coon Supper and hear from the cooks, the coon hunters, and some hungry people. We'll interview best-selling author Tim P. Carney about why traditions like this matter. And believe it or not, we'll also hear from former President Bill Clinton about his interaction with the Coon Supper. This episode will surprise and impact you, and will teach you something about yourself and about society. Eating barbecue raccoon has never been so good. I really doubt you're going to want to miss this one.
Would you say there's a prime cut on a coon?
Absolutely not.
It's all prime.
It's all, it's all prime. It's all prime.
All prime. Yeah. All right.
My name is Clay Newcomb, and this is the Bear Grease Podcast, where we'll explore things forgotten but relevant, search for insight in unlikely places, and where we'll tell the story of Americans who live their lives close to the land. Presented by FHF Gear, American-made, purpose-built hunting and fishing gear that's designed to be as rugged as the places we explore.
My name is Scott Place. I'm from Gillette, Arkansas. I live on Main Street, and I've been associated with the Coon Supper all my life. My dad was a master of ceremonies for it from the beginning up until 1989 or 90. So I had to go to the Coon Supper when I was even a little guy because there was nowhere else to be. You couldn't hire a babysitter or anything like that because everybody was at the Coon Supper.
The first recorded Coon Supper took place in 1933. Scott was born in 1954. He's 70 years old, and he was born in the house he's sitting in right now in downtown Gillette. It's a handsome, well-taken-care-of brick home with white modern siding. It was his parents' before it was his. Scott is a second-generation rice farmer.
My dad was at the first coon supper. He was a people person, and he sang and danced on the stage when he couldn't sing and dance. And it started as just a stag gathering for coon hunters around the area. Well, then you can imagine that got a little rough. And so the next year or two, they decided to invite the women. And then it took off from there.
Gillette is a small farming town in the Delta of Southeast Arkansas. Their coon supper is more than a citywide tradition. It's an event that brings an entire region together, really an entire state. Today, Scott Place, like his father, is kind of the grand marshal of this event. Not officially, and he wouldn't want me to say that, but that's my perception. The coon supper's importance to anyone who's been to it is clear, but it's hard to nail down amid the complexity of economic challenges and the loss of population. People are leaving places like this and not coming back. These are real problems for many small towns in America. Existential, time is moving forward without you kind of stuff that seems to hover over the Delta like a biblical plague. Just down the street from Scott's house lives Gillette's top politician, the mayor, Randy Womack. He lives on the corner of Main Street. He and Scott were college roommates. We're going to need some info on Gillette.
Back when we moved here in the 60s, at that time, there was close to 900 people, best I can remember. Now, say, since the last census, best I can remember, around 525, but it's changed. Like a lot of Delta towns have changed. As the tractors got bigger and eliminated a lot of the workers, so it's gradually gotten smaller.
This is a row crop farming community where soybeans, rice, wheat, and corn grow in alluvial soils they call buckshot, which is fertile clay that holds water, sticks to your boots, and they say it holds the world together. Gillette is 4 miles north of the Arkansas River and 40 river miles southeast, or 28.27 crow flying miles, to where the Arkansas River flows into the mighty Mississippi River. The bigger name for this bigger region is the Delta. You've heard us talk about it a lot. But more specifically, Gillette is in the Grand Prairie. These soils have been built by 10,000 years of flooding. The Quapaws farmed here from time immemorial until the early 1800s. And modern farming commercial operations have only been practiced here for roughly 100 years. But one thing is certain. If you live here, you're invested. Something about the flat, muddy ground of the Delta evokes that in people. There's a word for a person's relationship with their community. It's called social capital. Just file that away for a minute. And we're about to go to the coon supper, but there's still one important piece of the story that we haven't talked about yet, the Gillette school system. Something happened to their school.
Football games. Doesn't matter what the record was, stadium was going to be full, basketball game. It was kind of the center part of the town. When the consolidation and all come, I understand what it was costing the state and as many school districts as there were. So they went about, putting a limit on what the attendance was once you got below that number.
You may have heard Randy grunt right there at the end. When he did, he was shaking his head, as if something died and he didn't want to speak it out loud. The school was central to the town. It was the social glue. Gillette schools consolidated with a bigger school system in 2004. I wonder what Scott thought about the school closing.
Well, it's awful. But one thing led to another. The suspense of whether the school was going to shut down after it was officially consolidated in another district. How long was it going to stay open? So nobody moves into town, and your slow death It's agonizing. But the way farm economy has changed, and the land that we farm in the 50s supported 20 families, and now there's three or four, and everybody has two kids instead of nine. There's not enough kids to support a school in this area anymore, so it's just inevitable.
Inevitable is a powerful and intimidating word for rural America. 2004 was the beginning of the end for Gillette schools. They kept them open for 5 years, but in 2009, they completely closed the high school and junior high. But the grade school, K through 5, stayed open until 2021, when the last of the Gillette schools were completely closed. Today, the kids bus 14 miles to DeWitt, or DeWitt, as some would say. But it's not all bad. It's just a matter of perspective. This is Seth Place, Scott's son. He's in his early 40s, lives in Gillette, but his kids go to DeWitt schools.
It got heated there for a while with the school consolidation and all that stuff, and it was no big secret about some hard feelings here and there or whatever, but when I think about Gillette and how it used to be, that's how I feel when I go where my kids go to school up here at DeWitt. So it's basically, from my perspective, the community has grown.
That's an optimistic perspective, and Gillette does have a history of expanding its reach. On January 13th, 2024, Gillette held its 80th annual Coon Supper. Despite the challenges, this event is a bright spot on the calendar that brings this community together. It gives it identity and is one of the only anchors that is held. Myself, my wife Misty, along with Brent and his wife, drove to the Grand Prairie to see it for ourselves. This is about to get wild, folks, but let's not jump the gun. The first stop that we made was not at the Coon Supper, but at the Gillette Pre-Coon Supper. That's right, the Pre-Coon Supper, which starts about 2 hours before the Coon Supper. We've driven a couple of miles down a gravel road and parked by a large metal building. This is the late Congressman Mary and Barry's farm shed. What is this? I hear music. I've never been here before.
My name's Clay. Clay Newcomb.
Leslie, nice to see you.
A guy in dark frame glasses wearing a manly, daddish kind of barbecue and apron greets me. He carries himself like a guy in charge. I bet he knows what's up with this pre-Coon Supper stuff.
Hey, how's it going?
How you doing?
Clay Newcomb.
Hey, Clay. Gabe Holmstrom.
Give me like a little overview of the Coon Supper, or maybe even this.
This event. So yeah, we're here at the Berry Farm Shop. So this is the pre-Coon Supper reception. So okay. this event, you know, really goes back 50 years. So former Congressman Marion Barry, he used to live right across the street from the Gillette High School. And when people and elected officials and candidates would come down and come to the Coon Supper, they'd stop at his house to have a cocktail before going over to the Coon Supper.
That was Gabe Holmstrom. And he just told us a very important component of the tradition that has become the political event of Arkansas. Let's see who else is here.
My name is Jeremiah Moore. I'm from Clarendon, Arkansas. Currently serve as a state representative for House District 61 in the Arkansas State Legislature. My district runs from Amigan in Jackson County all the way down to Gillette in Arkansas County, and I would be remiss if I did not say that District 61 has the best duck hunting in all the world. You know, we're here right now at the Gillette Pre-Coon Supper. We're
about not to be confused with the Coon Supper. This is a pre-Coon Supper.
We're about to head on to the actual Coon Supper in a few minutes, and I would say that this is the foremost political event in the entire state of Arkansas. Now, you tell me any state, east or west of the Mississippi, where the foremost political event revolves around eating a raccoon, and you'll be right here in Gillette. So.
This pre-Coon Supper became a must-attend event in part because of Arkansas's most famous son, a young man who became Arkansas's governor in 1978. This is the guy that Gary Believer Newcomb went to high school with, and you may recognize his voice. We'll step out of the pre-Coon Supper for a minute to a speech this former governor made in 2023.
So when I started to run for office, Gillette had about 800 people. And there were about, as I recall, a minimum of 1,500 people that showed up at the Coon Supper every year.
This is former President Bill Clinton. Turns out he's a longtime Coon Supper guy.
And someone said, you know, you got to do this, and you got to call Marion Barry, and you got to go down there and see him and make all over the deal and act like you think Coon is better than filet mignon. So I show up, and it was already a kind of required appearance to go to Marion's house first, and all the Pauls were there and other people, and then we'd mosey over to the dinner.
He's talking about the pre-Coon Supper.
And so I said, Marion, do I actually have to eat this coon? He said, no. He said, not if you don't want to carry this place ever again. You don't have to eat it at all. And I said, well, okay, how do I eat it? He said, what do you mean? I said, I've seen it prepared for eating, and I said, there's a lot of gristle and fat right near the bone. How do I eat it without getting sick? He said, well, most people think they're eating coon meat with a little barbecue sauce. You should think of it in reverse, thinking you're eating barbecue sauce with a little coon meat. There's no such thing as too much barbecue sauce.
Ironically, this is the second time Bill Clinton's voice has been on the Bear Grease podcast. And he was once involved in a plane crash on the way to the Coon Supper, but that's another story. But Clinton helped put this tradition on the legendary column of Arkansas events. But it's now time for us to go to the supper. We're really about to eat some coon. This isn't a joke.
So we just left the pre-Coon Supper party, Brent. What are your thoughts?
Well, there was no coon served, but lots of conversation. But the food was good. There was duck poppers. That's duck wrapped with bacon and jalapenos. And there was ribs and sausage. And
so we're driving on a gravel road in the Grand Prairie of Arkansas. It's dark. The sun has set. There's a light glow on the horizon, on the western horizon, and we're now headed to the Gillette Coon Supper.
As we get into the Gillette city limits, the streets are filled with parked cars and people walking towards the school. We get out of our car.
Looks like we're walking up to an old gymnasium. It's dark outside. Stars are out. A beautiful waning gibbous moon above us.
This is the old Gillette High School gym. It looks like the movie Hoosiers could have been filmed here. Here we are.
We just got our tickets, and the tickets are numbered. We got 158, 159, 126 to 125. Oh, wow, we're going to have to split up.
It's all right.
All right.
It's on.
Oh, here we go.
This year they had 800 tickets, and they sold out. The gym is lined with tables with white tablecloths. At each place setting is the annual glass cup with the Coon Supper emblem in the year. Many people collect these. But each table has an aluminum foil tray of barbecue raccoon. I see a guy I want to talk to.
Tell me your name and who you work for.
Zach Hartman, Chief Policy Officer for Ducks Unlimited.
Why the heck are you at the Coon Supper?
Man,
do coons eat duck eggs?
Well, the most important thing for nest success is habitat. But
you're not opposed to eating a few coons.
But we aren't. I am not opposed to eating a few coons. But the really reason that we're here is because this is a great event for a great cause. We're here to raise money for Arkansas State's foundation and the scholarships that they provide to students that want to get involved in ag policy. And they have an opportunity to learn about agriculture conservation, which is an increasingly important component of our working lands these days.
Okay, enough of all that, man. What do you think of eating coon?
My man Ed Penny over here, who you know, I brought him here for his first time, and I took him to the coon supper, and I gave him, I sat him down, and I said, you know, you got to eat some coon, and he ate a piece of coon, and then he grabbed another piece, and I said, Ed, are you going back for seconds? And he said, yeah, it's good. And I said, really? And I tasted it, and it was, and it, like, ruined the whole joke.
Brent and I both grab a leg of coon and have a bite, and he's right, it ain't bad. But we've both had it before. We're old coon hunters, you know. Brent's wife won't even try it, but Misty took a nibble, and the report wasn't great, though. She was a little embarrassed to show her displeasure. Anyway, I see somebody else I want to talk with.
Yeah, this is Austin Booth, the director of the Arkansas Game and Fish.
Why are you at the coon supper, sir?
Well, it's an Arkansas tradition for us flatlanders. Mm-hmm. It's a good way to point out the nexus between public service and young Arkansans. And also a great way to see the Grand Prairie in its most beautiful time of the year, shoot some ducks, and eat some coon.
Now, are we also not trying to reduce the coon population in the state of Arkansas, sir?
Always, and proudly.
This is a good way to do it, right?
Absolutely.
Popularize, you know, there's a strategy. If we can popularize eating coon meat to the level that every child in America, every man, woman, and child wants to go kill a coon and eat it, then we might be winning. Do you agree with this?
I think Coon Wellington would be an American tradition forever.
Austin Booth is a former Marine, a lawyer, a native Arkansan, and our youngest game and fish director ever. From my angle, he's exemplifying some legit leadership while navigating the very complex wildlife issues of our state. Hat tip to Austin. Oh, look, here's somebody else I'd like to talk with.
I'm Leslie Rutledge, Lieutenant Governor of Arkansas. For the past year, I was the Attorney General for 8 years prior to that. I grew up on a cattle farm. I'm married to a row crop farmer, so I love being here in Arkansas farmland, you know, celebrating our way of life, our heritage, and then doing something really awkward, which is eat raccoon.
Pardon me, Madam Lieutenant Governor, but is it really awkward to eat raccoon? Is that the right word? And by the way, when I'm governor, Brent will be my lieutenant governor.
You know, we're doing this odd thing of eating barbecued raccoon, but it's really to talk about what the needs are here in Arkansas County, what the needs are for the farmers in this area.
Okay, so here's the real question after all that. How do you like coon?
Well, it's best not eaten, but if you have to eat it, I certainly suggest getting like one of the, you know, the backs or something where it looks big, but it's very little meat.
Oh, you got a strategy for how to get a big piece but not get much meat.
That's right, you know.
Strategy. It's all about strategy. That was good. I want to get into the nitty-gritty of how they're coming up with all this raccoon meat. This is their main supplier.
Tommy Cantrell.
And how long have you been supplying the coon server with coons?
Probably 6 or 7 years probably now.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So how many you usually catch for them?
I'll put it this way. Last year I carried them like 650 pounds.
Right.
And they're probably average 7 pounds, 6 to 7 pounds per coon. So you can figure that.
Okay.
I trap them. And also we hunt them with my dog. I got an old dog.
You got a coon dog. What kind of coon dog you got?
Well, she's not actually a coon dog. She's about half German Shepherd and have something else.
Okay.
But anyway, if we find one, you know, and she'll run him up a tree or something. But if we shoot him, if you ain't got a dog, he gonna get away. But she will catch him. She will catch him. Yes, sir.
So I did the math, and that's about 100 dressed raccoons. But that's just what Mr. Tommy brought in. They had a few other suppliers. Now I want to know how they cook it. Guess who the head cook is? Yep, Scott Place. The guy whose dad was the first master of ceremonies.
So are you, you're the main coon cook around here?
Well, I guess I'm the oldest cook.
Okay. Yeah. So tell me about the process of how you're cooking these.
My son Seth buys the coon, and we got freezers in the old field house. We keep it in, and then on Thursday we come get it out and let it thaw for a day. And then on Friday morning we got a bandsaw, and we cut it up into pieces and put it in a saltwater brine and soak it. 24 hours. And then today is our longest day. And we boil it in the big pots with a special recipe of stuff that we put in the boil water, almost like a
crawfish boil.
Yeah. And we boil it, and then we immediately put it on these smokers.
How many coons did you think y'all cooked today?
Coons, I don't know, but it's just under 800
pounds. 800 pounds. Now, at one time, it was a lot bigger than that. Y'all cooked like 2,000 pounds.
Yeah, back when we just served coon, well, we've had well over a ton before.
How many people you think were here tonight?
It was sold out of tickets. It was right at 800 tickets, I believe.
800 people.
And we used to have 1,000 tickets, but we took a table out back probably 20 years ago because maybe Americans are getting a little bigger. And
eating too much coon.
Yeah, maybe eating too much coon, and it was just so crowded.
I think they've got this coon cooking process dialed. This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Talking through stuff with an unbiased person can be really positive. It can help you learn coping skills, set boundaries, and gives you a realistic look into your life to see where you're doing something kind of crazy or where you're doing something right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greece today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greece. Sport Dog is the most recognized brand in the hunting dog training industry. Born in 2003 in Knoxville, Tennessee, Sport Dog was forged by a passionate group of hunters and dog trainers who intimately understood the challenges of the field and the special connection between hunters and their dogs. The people at Sport Dog know that having a well-trained hunting dog is more than just having a reliable partner. It's a commitment to their safety and unlocking their full potential. The Sport Dog promise to customers is simple: gear the way you design it. Every product Sport Dog builds is meticulously designed and rigorously tested in the field, ensuring it withstands the toughest conditions you and your dog may encounter. Trust Sport Dog, where innovation meets passion, to elevate your hunting experience and strengthen the bond with your local companion. Using tracking equipment on my squirrel and coon dogs is extremely important to me. To track my squirrel dogs and my one old coon dog that's not very good. Get 20% off your first purchase using the code BEARGREASE. Go to www.sportdog.com/BEARGREASE to learn more. The old timers say that the turkeys start gobbling when the leaves are as big as squirrels' ears and the red buds start popping. And we're about there. And we are there in the South. The Onyx Hunt app is one of my most valuable tools in the spring woods. With tools like coniferous versus deciduous tree distribution layer, you can save time by locating edges or transition areas of mixing habitats from home. Find an area like this with water in close proximity, and more than likely, there will be a goblin turkey nearby. Knowing the exact boundaries of private ground ensures I stay on the right side of the fence, but can easily find public ground to go see if I can't strike a gobbler. If you do get one to sound off, using compass mode and waypoints will help you pinpoint his exact location, allowing you to move in and make the perfect setup to bring him right into your lap. Download the Onyx Hunt app today. You'll be glad you did. Onyx has a special offer for you. Use code BEARGREASE to receive 20% off your membership at onxmaps.com/hunt this spring. I shuffle to sit down quickly as the main speaker is about to start. The room quiets as a man in a suit approaches the stage. Behind the podium is a giant orange handmade mural, paper mural, commemorating the 80th Coon Supper. On it is a raccoon as big as a picnic table. On the looker's left sits 8 high school seniors. These kids go to DeWitt schools now, but they're from families that live in Gillette. The night is all about them.
I want to thank you all for traveling in this cold weather to come and enjoy yourself tonight. We're really, really happy to have you here. This is the 80th time this group has met. This coon supper has been put on.
The speaker's demeanor changes and the room quiets as everyone knows what he's about to say.
Many of you know that we lost Pastor Chad Phillip this past year. Pastor was a great icon of Gillette, the surrounding area, and the coon supper. Let's remember Pastor Chad.
Pastor Chad was a big player here for the last several decades. But he's not the only one being remembered this year.
As many of you may know, we've lost another icon of Gillette and the coon supper this past year. Without a doubt, the most famous person from Gillette, Representative Marion Barry. Mr. Marion loved the Lord, he loved his family, he loved his farm, he loved Gillette, its people, and the coon supper. Marion devoted his life in service to his family, his country, and his community, and set an example to others on the impact that a man from a small town can make when seeking direction from God and being in service to others. Let's remember Representative Marion Barry.
I hope you can feel the sense of community and connectedness in this gym. And to think the mechanism that it's built around is eating a raccoon. This isn't a joke. And it's being done inside the context of a town that by measurable statistics might seem like it's wilting. But wait, there's more. Here's Senator Tom Cotton.
Good evening. It's great to be back at the Coon Supper again. You know, we always join at this time of the year. It's the darkest and coldest time of the year. We have a night of festivities and the warmth of community and fellowship. As we've heard, though, we have heavy hearts to a degree this year because of the passing of Pastor Chad and Marion Barry, but I think they would want all of us to be here where we are tonight, and they're looking down on us, and they're proud that this community is continuing with this unique, distinctive tradition. I think it's a testament to their legacy that we're all joining here together, as we always do, to help support the great students and kids of this community. Thank you all. God bless.
The evening comes to a close after every senior is recognized for their academic achievements. They each address the crowd and tell what their plans are after graduating. One young man is going into his family's pest control business. Another is heading to the University of Arkansas. Another is going into nursing school. Scholarship recipients are announced, and each senior is met by voluminous applause. Despite the town's population shrinking, the school's closing, the place is riding high on a deep sense of community pride. This is really something special. As the Coon Supper adjourns, I'm standing outside the doors of the event. I ask a passing guy his thoughts on what just happened. This is Johnny.
You've come to this quite a few times?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Where are you from?
I'm from Pine Bluff.
So what do you like about this?
I love it because it's just good people. One thing about it is it's constant. Ain't nothing never changed. It's going to always be the same. You do not have any problems.
Really, you're a commercial fisherman.
Yes.
Where do you fish? The White River?
White, Arkansas, and the Pine. And the Mississippi.
Awesome,
three.
Man.
All three.
But you're a fan of the Coon Supper.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's good people, stays the same, and it's beautiful. I think that's a pretty good synopsis. As I'm leaving, I see Seth Place, who's the second-in-command cook behind his dad. I'm a little late in asking him this, but he seems to be a coon meat expert, and I have a burning question.
That's what it is.
Would you say there's a prime cut on a coon?
Absolutely not.
It's all prime.
All prime.
Okay. All right.
He asks me if I want to see the cookers. So we walk out further into the yard right by the gym.
So y'all cook them all on this big smoker right here?
Well, we boil them first.
But these are the smokers.
Now, do y'all bring these in or?
No, nope, they stay here.
These are permanent smokers?
They are now. Now, I used to.
Since the school's closed.
Yeah, the school's closed. So, and then they basically donated these buildings to the Farmers and Businessmen Club so we can have this indefinitely as long as we can sell tickets.
Really?
But we just keep everything here now.
So this used to be Gillette Public School.
This is Cole Counts.
We consolidated to DeWitt, but this year's the first year the elementary's been gone.
So this is kind of like a ghost town down here.
It is.
It is.
At least in the sense of the school. It is.
I got to go to school here until I was in the 7th grade, and then my 8th grade year we consolidated, had to go to DeWitt.
Okay.
Amid the excitement and energy of the event, it's easy to forget this community is struggling to stay together. More people were in that gym than live in this town. They leave their giant built-in cookers outside the gym because it's not a functioning gym anymore. Just keep that in mind. We're going to go back to that. But first, I've had something on my mind since that first bite of raccoon. We're now in the car heading home, and I think it's possible that we've all broken the law. I decide to confront Brent on his hypocrisy. I'm trying to understand how I'm not the only person who thought of this.
Okay, so the one problem that I've foreseen is that they're buying this coon meat, and it is illegal to buy or sell wildlife meat.
There is an exception.
Really?
Yeah, I'm 100%.
Exception with coon.
Yeah, let me tell you something. Are you holding on to that mic? Because
yeah.
This is a mic drop moment.
Okay.
My brother, Tim, skins coons and prepares them to be sold, and his nephew sells them out the window of their pharmacy in Fordyce, Arkansas.
Are you serious?
You can go by there, drop off a gun to get picked up. To get cleaned and repaired, you can pick up your prescription and you can buy a coon. Ready?
Brace yourself, because I got the AGFC.
Okay, what's the AGFC say about it, Misty? We've just left the Gillette Coon Supper.
It is unlawful to purchase, sell, offer for sale, barter, or trade any species of wildlife or portions thereof, period. Exceptions: A, fur bearer pelts and carcasses taken during a fur bearer season may be sold.
Wow.
That's the first one. May be sold by persons with valid hunting or fur dealer licenses. Legally taken squirrel tails and pelts, rabbit pelts. This is a different bullet point.
I've heard all I need to hear.
Red fox, crazy.
It's legal.
Baby, we're going into business.
Alligator hide, alligator.
I stand corrected.
Sounds like Brent's off the hook. Somehow the legality of selling fur bearer meat has eluded me. But I'll tell you what else has eluded me. The real understanding of why something like the Coon Supper is valuable. I mean, it's easy to see and feel the value when you're there. It's undeniable. Anybody sees it. Everybody sees it. But how could you explain it to someone? I got the opportunity to talk with author Tim P. Carney, who's written multiple best-selling books. One is called Alienated America. He's an expert on this kind of stuff. And to be more specific about what that stuff is, a lot of the Coon Supper's value could be summed up by people gaining social capital. Remember, I told you to hold on to that word, file it away. This is incredibly interesting. Here's Tim.
Social capital is this term that sociologists use, maybe historians, and it's a weird word because capital is kind of a financial term, right? You're talking about money. Social is showing us that we're talking about something very different. So one way to think of social capital is, what are the things you have in your life that are really valuable, but you don't pay for and you couldn't quite sell them? Do you have a next door neighbor who you're just best friends with? That's social capital. Do you have extended family who will, bail you out if you get into trouble? That's having social capital. And so the truth is there's real inequality in social capital across America in ways that sometimes parallels and sometimes deviates from kind of wealth inequality. But one way of thinking of social capital is valuable things that you might or might not have in your life that are, they're social, They're not financial. They have to do with your connections and interactions with other people, and they usually explicitly are not something that you could pay for or sell or directly buy.
Our society is good at measuring external things that have monetary impact. So social capital is hard to measure, but it's primarily a function of our relationship to other people. Whether you're conscious of it or not, every human on Earth has some level of social capital. Now, this next observation about American society is kind of mind-blowing.
The greatest work on United States of America, I think, that was ever written was written by a French guy, and it was written 100 years ago. Yeah, it was Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. You know how sometimes somebody shows up at your house and they notice something that you don't notice because you've come to take it for granted? Americans, he was saying 200 years ago, take for granted how much they kind of just rely on not themselves as individuals, but themselves and their neighbors, their fellow countrymen, their brothers, or whatever, other people they know to solve problems. He said in England, again, this is 1830s, in England, people, they turned to the big landlord. I mean, it was semi-feudal at that point. There'd be a big, rich landholder, and they turned to him to solve their problems. In France, they turned to the government. In the United States, if there's a problem, people will, like, form a ditch-digging organization to keep the town from flooding when the runoff is coming down from the mountain. So that idea that we're self-starters, but we're not just individuals. So it's still a sort of self-reliance, but it's a self-reliance in fraternity, in neighborhood, in community. And that was unique to America is what Tocqueville argued.
We have self-reliance inside of fraternity, inside of community. And this thing was unique to America kind of from the beginning. A different term to describe what de Tocqueville saw here is civic engagement. That word sounds pretty scary to me, but it actually determines a lot about our communities. And to equate it back to the Coon Supper, attending or volunteering at a community event like this is civic engagement. Turns out that stuff is quite important, and it's on a dramatic decline in America.
So you could look at, you know, how much do people vote? How much do people participate in the census? That all matters. How does that relate to social capital? Well, if you're the guy who took it on the chin and coached kindergarten girls basketball, if you're the guy who you didn't even think about it, but you sent your sons over to shovel the neighbor's yard sidewalk when he was away, it is a little bit like finance in that you put a bunch in, and then when you need it, you can draw it out. But there's not like a ledger being kept. That's the real thing about social capital and community. There's just an understanding that we have an obligation to look out for other people. So we're going to do it. We're going to be civically engaged. And the more civically engaged you are, the more capital you have. The main way I would say that works is the more things that you belong to, then the more things you can rely on. That is, I belong to my local church. I belong to my kids' schools. I don't just cut the check and send my kids there. I serve on the board of one. My wife's a substitute teacher at another. We show up at things. I belong to my employer. I work to get to know my neighbors. So I belong to all these things. So a common word in this area of study is reciprocity, which again, is just relationship. The understanding, I'll take care of you, you take care of me. And community was always built on the fact that we had needs. It wasn't just, hey, I want to hang out with my buddies. It was, oh, I need to go into town to get something. Oh, I need to call on my friend to lift this one thing. And if you take away some of those needs, then we lose the stuff we didn't know we needed, which was a connection, the friendship, the camaraderie, the belonging. And so the guy who wrote the best book on this was Robert Putnam, Bowling Alone. That came out right as you and I were finishing up, you know, our college years there. 2000, I think, was the pub date on that. And he used bowling because he said he found out that people weren't bowling less in 2000 than they had in 1960, but they were bowling leagues had crumbled everywhere. So people were more likely to bowl alone or bowl just with their best friend or their wife or whatever. And that was just almost a little analogy for what was happening more broadly. Membership, you know, PTA membership had collapsed, and all of this stuff. What we belonged to had gone down across the board. And so I went and I looked to update the numbers when I wrote Alienated America that came out 2019, so almost 20 years later, and it had just continued. The people just, again, more likely to sort of strike out on them their own. When I was on the board of a small organization here in D.C., we did this study and it came back. Millennials didn't want to join anything. We said, be a member. They're like, I don't want to be a member. We're like, will you chip in $20 to help us out? They're like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. But I'm not joining. OK, I don't want to belong to it. And so you and I are at the sort of tail end of Gen X. And I think that that was already in motion.
Studies show that America's civic engagement peaked in the 1960s and has been declining ever since. By the time I graduated high school in the late 1990s, it had plummeted. I remember my dad, the believer, being involved in everything he possibly could his whole life. He was in a fraternity in college. He never drank, by the way. A member of the Kiwanis Club, the Lions Club, the Archery Club. He was a deacon at the church. And for decades, he was heavily involved in a group that helped families with critical construction projects, like if the roof was leaking and they couldn't afford to get it fixed, or if some family needed a wheelchair ramp built. He was very civically involved. But he grew up in the time of America's peak civic engagement. He always wanted me to do more stuff, but I just wasn't that interested. Now, as an adult, I have maintained high levels of involvement in my church my whole life, but I have not been nearly as involved in other stuff. I didn't know until I talked with Tim that I was just a pawn in the common trend of my generation. I didn't choose this all on my own like I thought. It's kind of spooky when you realize that you have less control over your life than you think. That is interesting. But who is most affected by this lack of civic engagement? Is it the rich or the poor who are less civically engaged? I bet it's those rich folks.
There are nuances to this. It's worse, the collapse of belonging, civic engagement, bowling leagues, etc. All that stuff is worse in the working class in America than it is in the middle class or the upper middle class. There's this stereotype that, you know, wealthier Americans, you know, you live behind a gate or you're, you know, with your money, you're just buying your isolation. But if you go to like these rich suburbs where houses are really expensive and the property taxes are high, they have enough Little League coaches for every team. They have people leaving the kids lead their bikes out on the front yard because neighbors sort of know neighbors. The collapse in community and civic engagement is greater for a dozen reasons I go through in the book in the working class. And so that's particularly harmful because these are people who rely more on social capital. If you're rich and don't have friends, you could buy stuff. But the irony is the richer people in America, not the, you know, super rich celebrities who have to live in a gated, you know, mansion, but the upper middle class, they are more likely to know their neighbors, more likely to volunteer, more likely to belong to things. And it's because this sort of thing isn't just an individual choice. It's a community thing. The community has to give you those opportunities. And in some parts of America, those opportunities for belonging and volunteering aren't there.
That's very interesting and not what I was expecting. But that's just why the community of Gillette is so unique. I spent some time describing the Gillette Coon Supper to Tim Carney. I wanted to see what he thought. Here's what he said.
When you describe that, I want to go to Gillette and see this and eat the food and watch the people. This is the stuff that makes America great, really. And I've seen it in other towns. There's my favorite town in Iowa is this town called Imogene, Iowa, which is down to 30 people. How does a town survive with 30 people? Well, it has an Irish pub, a beautiful Catholic church, and then a softball field where they have a big tournament as part of what they call Shamrock Days, because, you know, Irish population traditionally. And it brings in people who used to live there and people from the other towns. And these sort of things even if they're only occasional things, they really keep a town alive. Tradition, customs, these things are social capital that gets passed down from generation to generation. It's almost like you're time traveling, right? You're talking about these kids in Gillette, and they don't even have a high school, but they almost get to travel back to when they do, because suddenly there's a senior class, the high school Gillette senior class, even though there's no Gillette High School. And so that is what customs do. They provide, I often talk about social capital as providing sort of we use the word network, but just imagine an infrastructure, something that's a scaffolding that holds you up. Traditions are a sort of scaffolding that spans across time. And so that's one of the key things that strong communities do, is they have traditions, they have customs, they have these things, and it just injects a little bit of meaning into everybody's life. And so these big annual things, they can sort of keep a town on the map, give a town an identity, even if other things are crumbling.
I think it's pretty unique that we can learn so much about ourselves and our community by looking at a wild tradition like the Coon Supper. I love it. And I'd say there's a high likelihood Brent and I will be back at the Coon Supper next year. That is, if we can get some tickets. I can't thank you enough for listening to Bear Grease. Please leave us a review on iTunes and tell your friends, family, and coworkers about the amazing stories you're hearing here and on Brent's podcast, This Country Life. And be sure to check out our friend Tim P. Carney's new book called Family Unfriendly, How Our Culture Made Raising Kids Much Harder Than It Needs to Be. I hope you have a great week. This show is sponsored in part by BetterHelp. Around New Year's, we get obsessed with how to change ourselves instead of just expanding on what we've already done right. Maybe you finally organized one part of your space and you want to tackle another. Or maybe you're taking your supplements every morning and now you actually want to eat breakfast. In the last year, I've been more diligent about going to the gym on a regimented schedule, and it's made a lot of difference in my life. Therapy helps you find your strengths so that you can ditch the extreme resolutions and make changes that really stick. Therapy is helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Celebrate the progress you've already made. Visit BetterHelp.com/grease today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/grease. Outdoor adventure won't wait for engine problems. Things like hard starts, rough performance, and lost fuel economy are often caused by fuel gum and varnish buildup. Seafoam can help your engine run better and last longer. Simply pour a can in your gas tank. Hunters and anglers rely on Seafoam to keep their engines running the way it should the entire season. Pick up a can of Seafoam today at your local auto parts store or visit SeafoamWorks.com to learn more.